This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Futuro.
Dear listener, this month we're bringing you episodes of La Brega. It's a special 7-part mini-series presented by Futuro Studios and WNYC Studios about the Puerto Rican experience. Today's episode, Basketball Warriors. Our very own Julio Ricardo Varela tells the story of a basketball game that Puerto Ricans will never forget. And if you'd like to hear any of the episodes in Spanish, visit the La Brega feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And now I'm going to hand things off to WNYC's Alana Casanova Burgess, but definitely stay tuned after the episode for a conversation with me, Alana, and Julio Ricardo Varela. Enjoy!
In the summer of 1979, journalist Julio Ricardo Varela was 10 years old, and he was spending the summer with his dad in Río Piedras in San Juan.
And it was the same year that the 1979 Pan American Games were happening and were being hosted in Puerto Rico. It felt like it was our little mini Olympics.
For the opening ceremony, they commissioned this big Hollywood-style musical number.
And it was so exciting because here they were. Here were all these athletes. And when you're 10 and you're a sports freak like I am, that's all you were thinking about. I mean, I was obsessed with it. I loved it.
Especially, he loved the Puerto Rican national basketball team, La Selección Nacional.
It was like watching your heroes. And here were your heroes ready to represent your homeland in basketball.
Julio was born in Puerto Rico and grew up there. But when he was in first grade, he moved with his mom to the Bronx and would go back and forth to the island over the years. But he never had any doubt as to who his team was. It was always Puerto Rico. And in 1979, at the Pan American Games, it was easy to root for Puerto Rico.
Que tira, falla. Falta uno, se acabó. Gana Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico.
Because they were kicking butt. The other top team was the United States, but midway into the tournament, the U.S. squad got into a scandal. The scandal surrounded their coach, the infamously hot-tempered Bobby Knight, known for his outrageous outbursts and angry locker room speeches, like this one.
I'm gonna f***ing guarantee you that if we don't play up there Monday night, you ain't gonna believe the next 4 f***ing days.
One day during the Pan Am Games, Bobby Knight got into a scuffle with a Puerto Rican policeman, during which he allegedly hit the officer. According to the officer, Knight also called him the N-word. He was arrested and charges were pressed. It was all over the news. And it just so happens that Puerto Rico and the United States were set to face off in the final. It was a hard-fought, close game, but the U.S. side, led by a young Isaiah Thomas, ultimately won and took home the gold. After the game, Bobby Knight told the press that the only thing Puerto Ricans were good at was, quote, growing bananas. And there was something else.
As they were leaving Puerto Rico, this is what is reported.
I feel like you're going to tell me that he spat in some mofongo or something.
No. He dropped his pants and he mooned Puerto Rico. He put his, put his ass against the window.
No.
And he mooned Puerto Rico as they flew off. Like, the ugly American, here you go again, thinking you're better than us.
Julio remembers the incident was the only thing the grown-ups around him could talk about for weeks.
Ese Bobby Knight, que pendejo cabrón, egoísta americano, maltratando a nosotros.
That freaking a-hole, the way he mistreated us.
So, throughout this history, right, to me, it's always about beating the Americans. And luckily for Puerto Rico, there have been chances to take revenge.
Without a doubt, there is a deep connection between being Puerto Rican and rooting for our sports teams. And yes, people all over the world love sports and are proud of their athletes. But in Puerto Rico, the stakes are just higher. Because Puerto Rico, despite being a U.S. colony, competes in international sporting events like the Olympics on its own, under its own flag, as if we were an independent country. Journalist Noel Algarin, who has covered sports in Puerto Rico for many years, put it this way.
The only place where we can call ourselves sovereign is in sports. In sports, we get this opportunity to be Puerto Rico, the country from the Caribbean. We get to be someone. And then we get chances in a more symbolic way to face the country that owns you in some way.
Today, we're going to tell a story about one of those chances. You could say a chance for revenge against Bobby Knight. A time when Puerto Rico faced off against the United States in basketball on the sporting world's largest stage. Julio Ricardo Varela, a journalist with Futuro Media, takes the story from here.
So at the time I was watching the 1979 game on TV, this guy was actually watching courtside.
Bueno, mi nombre es Flor Meléndez. Estoy en Bayamón, en mi casa, en el pueblo de Bayamón, en Puerto Rico.
Flor Meléndez was a coach of the team that year, and he was a legend in Puerto Rico. In a documentary about the 1979 games, you can see him screaming at players and gesturing wildly. He's looking really sharp with this thick black mustache and fro. Flor went on to become one of the national team's all-time most decorated coaches. And his story kind of runs parallel to the story of Puerto Rican basketball. So, Flor grew up in a big family.
11 hermanos.
The oldest of 11 siblings. They lived in public housing.
Caserío público.
We're talking 1960. Flor started playing basketball at his local YMCA. Then, as a teenager, he played in the Puerto Rican League. And pretty early on, Flor figured he had a talent for coaching. He describes his coaching style as
fuerte,
tough.
Yo soy una persona que me gusta la disciplina.
Discipline heavy. And Flor got into coaching right around this kind of magic moment for Puerto Rican basketball. Coaches like Flor and league officials, they started visiting New York City and scouting the courts where New Yorkers were playing street ball. And they started convincing these players to leave their lives behind to come play professionally in Puerto Rico. Here are these amazing Afro-Puerto Ricans who learned the craft in the mecca of the sport and brought it back.
Jugadores tenían otro ritmo de juego, más rápido, unos saltarines extraordinarios.
It was a different kind of basketball than people were used to in Puerto Rico. It was a faster rhythm of play with big dunks. And it was fun. Like, that type of basketball is fun.
Ya ahí fue un boom.
These were the boom years for Puerto Rican basketball.
Con el pase para Jimmy Thornton, adelantado para Willie Piñón, con el trabajo de
la... ¡Acabó! Puerto Rico ha derrotado a Cuba, que estaba...
2-1, ganó Puerto Rico.
And as the team kept winning and becoming better, basketball in Puerto Rico became the sport. Fans filled the stadiums.
De jugar todos los días a cancha llena y convertirse en el primer deporte del país.
Escúchame, amigo, te lo vas a bufiar. This, by the way, is a promotional rap song recorded by the team in 1986. By the 90s, many from that generation of great New Yorican players had retired. But they had inspired a new wave of Puerto Rican-born players. And those players, they took the team to even greater heights.
Ganando Puerto Rico.
Cargando con la victoria final, 87-77.
Puerto Rico, campeón panamericano, medalla de oro en estos undécimos Juegos Panamericanos.
Gold in the 1991 Pan American Games. Gold in the 1993 Central American Games. And maybe the biggest accomplishment of all, fourth place in the 1990 World Championships. Puerto Rico, the fourth best team in the world. That's pretty good. With Puerto Rico having made a name for itself on the international stage, Flor Meléndez got opportunities to coach in Argentina and Panama, but it was always clear to him that coaching the Puerto Rican national team, that was a different kind of responsibility.
Yo tengo un dicho que...
He has this saying.
La bola de baloncesto es el alma. Nosotros no tenemos ejército. Puerto Rico no tenemos ejército. Pero que a nosotros ese era el alma que nos daban para representar a nuestro país, que la camiseta... Era el uniforme de guerra de nosotros y lo tomé así.
He thinks about it like this. Puerto Rico doesn't have an army, so we, the national basketball team, we are the ones that have to represent the country. He says that the basketball is a weapon and the basketball jersey is actually a soldier's uniform. And it's this reverence, right? It's like you respect it like you respect a flag. He told me he had this ritual he would do with the national team, that at the season's first practice, where they would put on their national team jerseys for the first time.
Pues yo le entregaba a ellos un pin de Puerto Rico, de la bandera de Puerto Rico.
He'd go down the line and hand out little Puerto Rican flag pins to all the players.
Eso a los muchachos los emocionaba mucho, ¿viste?
He says the players would get so emotional about it. And whenever they'd face the United States in international play, those games had a special kind of weight. It was the chance for his soldiers to go to war.
La guerra, una guerra, la guerra, la guerra, la guerra que no hemos podido ganar para independizarnos.
The war we haven't been able to have to win our independence, he says. Puerto Rico was generally pretty outgunned in this war. The U.S., after all, was and is the global superpower of basketball, especially after the 1992 Barcelona Olympics. What happened was, a few years before, the International Basketball Federation made a change to their rules to allow NBA players in international competitions. And that change was huge.
This summer, the U.S. Olympic basketball team will make history. The dream team of Jordan, Bird, Ewing, Robinson, Pippen, Drexler, Mullen, Barkley, and Magic.
That first dream team that went to Barcelona in 1992 was legendary.
This collection of superstars has been unselfishly magnificent.
It wasn't just a sports team. It was a cultural phenomenon.
You've got yourself the gold medal meal.
What you want is what you get.
At McDonald's today!
Gold medal? It's in the bag.
And they kicked everybody's ass. It wasn't even close. It wasn't even fun to watch. They were that good.
And there it is. And the Dream Team win gold.
And from then on, the players changed. But the Dream Team was here to stay. The U.S. won gold again in 1996 at the Atlanta Olympics.
The United States has won the gold.
In 2000 at the Sydney Olympics, same story.
And it's all smiles now from Dream Team 4.
And then you get to the 2004 Olympics in Athens, and the U.S. team was an institution at that point. And the first game they were going to play that Olympics was with Puerto Rico. The 2004 team was stacked. Allen Iverson, AI, Dwayne Wade, D-Wade, Tim Duncan, one of my favorite players of all time. I mean, the team even had LeBron James in his early days. LeBron James. The U.S. had the best basketball teams in the world when they were using amateur players. But when the NBA showed up, these guys were invincible in the Olympics. I mean that literally. Since NBA players were allowed to play, they had never lost an Olympic game. They were the Death Star. And if the U.S. team was the Death Star, the Puerto Rico team was definitely the ragtag Rebel Alliance. The players were mostly local stars from the Baloncesto Superior Nacional, the league in Puerto Rico. You had Jose Ortiz, also known as Piculín.
Oh, that's the leader, the rock, the legend.
That's Julio Cesar Torres. He's the filmmaker behind a great Puerto Rican basketball documentary called New Yorican Basket. You had Eddie Casiano.
Eddie, man. Eddie was the firecracker. He would go toe-to-toe with you. And if he had to fight, he would fight.
McGrady and Casiano going nose-to-nose.
Rolando Jorutined.
He was all about the craft, very disciplined, and a great defender.
And a lot of other really talented guys. Larry Ayuso, Bobby Joe Hatton. And then there was Carlos Arroyo.
Carlos Arroyo was the young gun.
Arroyo por el cristal, su primer canasto de la noche.
Anxious to prove himself with a lot of talent.
As Arroyo knocks down that jumper.
Carlos was in the NBA. He was a starting point guard with the Utah Jazz that season and was on a path to becoming a legend.
Arroyo to the angle right, gets behind tag, shaking and baking, and they double him momentarily. Now he goes right to the hoop, reverse to the right side, bank it up and in, count it, he's fouled.
At 6'2", he was a lot shorter than most other NBA guys. But Carlos was fast, and he played with energy, and he played with heart, and we all loved him. So a few weeks before the Olympics, the Puerto Rican team goes to Florida for a week of practice and a series of warm-up games against the U.S. team. This is strangely standard practice leading up to these big international competitions, and it was an opportunity to get to know the enemy. And at these games, they're playing man-to-man defense, which is what it sounds like. Each player follows a player on the other team and sticks to them. And Puerto Rico, because of their size or lack of it, you know, the Americans are bigger, they were faster. They wanted to play zone defense where you literally stay in a zone and you defend a set area of the court. During one of those games, the American coach went up to the Puerto Rican coaches and asked for a favor.
Que por favor, que no le jugáramos zona durante el juego, que jugáramos hombre a hombre, que era donde ellos nos dominaban a nosotros siempre.
He said, can you please not play zone during this game? And it was one of those, like, Flor Melendez moments to be like, insert mysterious discovery music. Interesting. They don't want to play against a zone.
Y después nosotros, pues, nos quedamos callados.
He says they kept quiet. And pulled a classic jíbaro move.
Del jíbaro puertorriqueño, el hombre del camp, que siempre tiene algo cuando uno sube para allá y creen que uno no sabe nada.
He says whenever city people visit the mountains, they think the jíbaros, the country people, are simpletons.
Pues siempre el jíbaro tiene algo guardado.
But secretly, they always have something up their sleeve.
We'll be right back. This is La Brega.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between, and they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're back. This is La Brega. It's the summer of 2004, and the Puerto Rican national basketball team arrives in Athens to compete in the Olympics. Their first rival is the United States Dream Team, who, by the way, aren't staying at the Olympic Village with the rest of the delegations, but in a luxury cruise ship in Athens Harbor. Julio Ricardo Varela picks the story back up.
On the morning of the game in Athens, the Puerto Rican team is expecting the worst. Rolando Arutined was in his dorm room in the Olympic Village when one of the coaches on the staff, Julio Toro, barged in the room.
Early in the morning, Julio comes in. He's on his, you know, jockey underwear or whatever it was. No shirt, no nothing, just barefoot. He's like, hey, you guys, what's going on, Julio? It's too early, man. So I want you guys to know that we're going to do something different today. I said, what are you talking about? He's like, well, you have to wait and see.
A few hours later, the players are gathered in the locker room, and the coaches bust out their plan. They thought maybe they had found the weakness in the Death Star. They're going to do a variation on the zone defense that the Americans didn't want to play against back in Florida. For all you basketball nerds out there, a variation known as a triangle and two defense, with the goal of forcing the U.S. team to take outside shots.
So, Lou, we looked at each other like, hey, you know, never done it. We lose by 30 every time, so might as well try it.
The game was set to start at 8 p.m. Athens time, 1 p.m. in Puerto Rico. I remember I was at my home in the Boston area that day, watching the game in my bedroom, all by myself, all alone. I had a Puerto Rico shirt. I do remember that, my old Puerto Rico t-shirt. And I had really low expectations, to be honest. To jog my memory for this story, I recently rewatched the game. I'm excited. This is the first time I've put this on since 2004. You can see in the broadcast that the arena in Athens was pretty full. Everybody wanted to see the debut of the U.S. team. Before they started playing, both teams lined up for a group picture. Every single photographer turned to photograph the U.S. team. And the Puerto Rican team, they just stood there. The whistle blows. The start of the game, it was pretty tight back and forth.
United States leading early by two.
Puerto Rico didn't really start off strong. They just played enough to keep it close.
An impressive start for Puerto Rico.
I was like, okay, all right. How long is this going to last? This will be entertaining until the U.S. scores like 80 points in a row, and then we're down by 60.
And there's the buzzer ending the first quarter.
But for me, things really kicked off in the second quarter when Carlos Arroyo found Piculín with a super cool pass. Here it comes. Look at this pass. Hello.
Carlos Arroyo. Oh, what a ball fake.
And then it begins. Something just clicks. And Puerto Rico has this sequence of amazing plays. Little by little in the broadcast, you start to notice that most of the people in the arena were rooting for Puerto Rico. And how could you not root for Carlos Arroyo that day? He had these super flashy passes. He was making incredible shots, just dominating the court.
Excellent ball handling from Carlos Arroyo. Body's flying all over the place. Arroyo with the steal.
Nos daban las cosas se nos daban. O sea, ellos decían, pero ¿qué pasa aquí? Estos tipos no fallan.
Floor watch Puerto Rico nails shot after shot.
Lo que notamos en ellos era el mal humor. Los jugadores como frustrados.
He says he noticed the U.S. players in a bad mood, frustrated. And it was probably because the Puerto Rican strategy seemed to be working. Here's Rolando Arutined.
You know, we were pretty physical and we were really giving it to them, you know, and it's something that they were not used to it. And it was our turn to talk trash.
Go ahead and shoot it. You don't want to shoot it, right? Go ahead, shoot it. Let me see it. Let me see your shot, right?
As the second quarter ticked down, Puerto Rico's lead just kept growing.
It's hard to believe I'm saying this, but the United States trails by 20. And there's the buzzer ending the first half. A disastrous first half for the United States.
At halftime, the score was 49-27. 22-point lead for Puerto Rico. And you could see it on the faces of the American coaches. They looked so dejected. Meanwhile, at 1 p.m. in Puerto Rico, Iran Martinez, then a sports editor at El Vocero, was getting ready to turn on the game when his wife asked him to go to the mall with her to pick something up.
Mi esposa quería que fuéramos a comprar algo a Plaza Las Américas. Y yo, pero espérate.
Reluctantly, Iram goes to the mall and finds a store window with the televisions turned to the game.
Como habían 100 personas haciendo lo mismo.
About 100 people were crowded around doing the same thing. And to Iram's surprise, Puerto Rico's doing pretty well in the first minutes. But he thinks, who cares?
Yo dije, bueno, total. Nos van a dar una pela.
They're just going to come back and slam us. So he heads back home in the car when he gets a call from his daughter.
Y me dice, ¿estás viendo el juego?
Are you watching the game, she asks.
Yo, no, si qué diablo, ni lo estoy oyendo por radio. Y me dice, estamos ganando.
Iram's like, no, why bother? And she says, we're winning. Soon Iram is getting frantic calls from the newspaper.
Y me dice, ¿dónde tú estás? Porque están ganando. Puerto Rico le está ganando a Estados Unidos y ganándole bien.
Where are you? Get over here. We're beating the U.S. and we're beating them good.
Y yo, no, no puede ser.
Even the Puerto Rican players in the locker room at halftime were surprised at the score. Here's Rolando.
First of all, my first thought was, are we really beating this team by 19? That was my first thought, right? Go walk into the locker room. And second was like, wow, I have more pressure now than I did at the beginning of the game. Because it's a brand new game, 20 brand new minutes. And you know they're going to come back stronger.
You thought the Americans were going to make a run eventually and come back and beat us. They had to. The third quarter is also really back and forth. The U.S. makes points.
Good drive to the basket. Pretty move from Allen Iverson.
But Puerto Rico maintains its lead.
Arroyo inside and the lead back up to 21.
The quarter closes 65-48. Puerto Rico is still leading by 17 points. And then the fourth quarter starts. And that's when things get scary. It starts with about 9 minutes left on the clock. Puerto Rico's up by 15. And LeBron James.
James wide open. And hits the three. LeBron James from downtown. And it's a 12-point game.
It was the first three for the United States in a long time. And then they just keep making baskets.
Lamar Odom cuts the lead to 12. Iverson for three. Boy, that's a huge bucket. As we go under the five-minute mark.
On the court, Rolando watched as Puerto Rico's hard-fought lead disappeared from 22 at halftime to just 8 points.
I would look up at the clock. I'm like, to me, it's like, hurry up and, you know, finish, right? I just want to end this game.
Suddenly, it looked like the U.S. could turn the tide in the final minutes. But then... right here, baby. Right here, Carlos. Carlitos.
Fight for the rebound. Here comes Arroyo.
Carlitos!
Arroyo draws the foul and one.
That was awesome. Up by 11. Puerto Rico answers the charge. Suddenly, only 1 minute remains. Puerto Rico is back to leading by 20, and it's clear. The U.S. has run out of time to catch up.
Ahí yo dije, ah, ya aquí ganamos. No, no podemos perder.
Back in San Juan, at the offices of El Vocero, at that very moment, Iram finally exhaled. With victory near, the coach takes Carlos Arroyo out of the game.
Carlos Arroyo, the game of his life, 24 points as he comes out.
As he walks off the court, cocky as all hell, he looks at the stands and grabs his jersey and pulls forward the part where it says Puerto Rico, as if to show everybody watching the name of the place he's from. Oh, that was awesome when he did that. In part, it was a gesture of defiance to a U.S. player who had fouled him a few moments ago. But to many in the audience watching, the message was way bigger than that.
Fue como decirle a los tipos.
Flort says that it was like Carlos was telling the Americans,
nosotros somos los poderosos, ¿viste? O sea,
look, we're the powerful ones.
Y ahí empezamos a abrazarnos y empezaron, o sea, lágrimas y todo. Eso fue como una cosa.
In the newsroom in San Juan, people started hugging each other. Tears were falling.
Yo estaba como si fuera un editor novato. ¿Qué hago ahora? ¿Cómo lo hago?
Iram was so shaken up with joy that he says he felt like a brand new journalist, at a loss for how to do his job. The final score? 92-73.
It's finally happened. The United States loses in Olympic play with NBA players. They showed some signs in the second half, but dug themselves too big a hole. And an experienced team led by a brilliant performance from Carlos Arroyo put the game away.
On the court at Athens, Rolando remembers that final moment as having this dreamlike, out-of-body quality.
You come off the court celebrating, but at the same time, you're not still believing what happened. And then you're being interviewed in Italian by the Italian press. It's a lot of things happening at the same time that you are, you know, you're consumed by all this and you don't even know how to react. You are kind of numb.
Back at the offices of El Vocero, everyone was buzzing to get the paper ready for the morning. They had already decided on the cover when Iram saw a photo come in that instantly caught his eye. It's of Carlos Arroyo, from that moment he walked off the court showing off his Puerto Rico jersey. It was this quick moment on the court. If you blinked, you could have missed it. But here, captured by the camera, there's something special about that image. And Iram says,
esta es la foto.
This is the photo.
Y entonces voy donde el artista y me dice, no, pues si ya estamos cerrados con esto. Y yo, no. Esta es la foto. O sea, esta es la foto de la que vamos a estar hablando en los próximos 50, 100 años.
The layout designer was like, no way, we already have the cover. But Iram's like, this is the photo. This is the photo we're going to be talking about 50, 100 years from now. This needs to be the cover.
Cuando hablemos de ese juego, esta es la foto que siempre va a tener la gente en la mente.
All night long, the island celebrates the win. The next morning, the team wakes up and heads mostly together to the cafeteria for breakfast. And as they walk through the Olympic Village,
eran todas las delegaciones.
All the delegations of athletes from around the world were there.
Y perdona que me emociono un poco, tú sabes.
And as they walked into the cafeteria,
parecía una fiesta de Puerto Rico allí porque eran los alemanes, los de Irak, todos los países parados dejaron de almorzar para aplaudir al equipo de Puerto Rico.
Flor says, you'd think it was a Puerto Rican party. Everybody from the Germans to the Iraqis, all of them stood up, stopped eating, and clapped for Puerto Rico.
Imagínate, eso uno no se lo imagina nunca que eso pueda pasar.
He says it's something one never imagined could happen. They were getting a standing ovation from the world. And it's just a fleeting moment. That's the thing that is just so bittersweet about it. It's 24 hours of joy, and then that's it. The team doesn't perform nearly as well for the rest of the tournament. They were eliminated in the quarterfinals in a game against Italy. But when Puerto Ricans remember Athens, they don't remember losing to Italy. They remember beating the United States. Rolando Orutiner says people on the island still come up to him and thank him.
It was very, very emotional for the island. And up until today, people remember the date. It's like, you know, like one of those President's Day or whatever. So it's the day that we beat USA. It's like David beat Goliath.
It hasn't been 50 or 100 years yet, but the image of Carlos Arroyo grabbing the jersey has become an enduring symbol of Puerto Rican power and pride. Everybody knows that image. It was even painted as a mural in Viejo San Juan. I think it means more than ever now. To me, 2004 was before the hard times hit Puerto Rico. The debt, hurricanes, people leaving, political failures. This creeping feeling of failure, of no hope, because everywhere around you, you know, you're not winning. So I think there's something special about looking back at what happened in Athens about these sports victories. They aren't permanent, but that moment when the game is over and Puerto Rico is on top, it tells people that yes, you can win. So that's why you gotta hold up that jersey and show it off a little bit.
And after listening to this great episode of La Brega, I mean, I just love the production on this. We have a real treat for you, my dear listener. I'm joined now by the host of La Brega, which is WNYC's Alana Casanova Burgess, and our very own Julio Ricardo Varela. Welcome, Alana and Julio.
Hey, Maria.
Thanks for having us.
So, Alana, you've been answering this question for weeks now. Okay. Assuming that there are some people who haven't heard our extraordinary miniseries, La Brega, people are going to say, okay, what are you saying? What is that word, La Brega? So what does La Brega mean, like the concept, and also in terms of the podcast?
Well, La Brega is a word that exists in Spanish, but in Puerto Rico and here in the diaspora, we use it in this very broad way. It's this word that is really a lens into our experience. So a brega is a kind of challenge. It's a struggle, something that you can't quite resolve, but you can get around it. You can negotiate. You find your way through it. When we're asked, how are you doing? What's going on in your life? You might say, ah, tú sabes, aquí en la brega. And when you say it like that, exasperated, it means I'm not doing well, I'm not doing poorly, but you know, I'm struggling, I'm hustling, I'm here, I'm in it, I'm dealing with it. But you can also, you know, because it means deal with it, sometimes it's kind of cute. You can say, no puedo bregar, you know.
I can't deal with it.
I can't deal with it.
My favorite one is, ¿cómo estás? How you doing? Aquí bregando.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much a verb, right?
It's very much a verb.
In the process of dealing with, of figuring out the challenge.
Yes. And actually, Arcadio Díaz Quiñones, who is a famous Puerto Rican scholar, who we feature in the first episode, in both first episodes, because it's in Spanish and in English, he says that la brega is never finished, right? Like la brega, you are constantly bregando. It is this endless thing. And he also wrote this essay called De Cómo y Cuándo Bregar, which is a way to see Puerto Rican culture through this word, right? Why are we always struggling and why do we take such pride in the struggle? And sometimes it's good to take pride in that struggle. We are creative, we are amazing, we are talented. And other times, why are we struggling so much and congratulating each other on it? So that's La Brega, the podcast.
Right, right. A very, very Puerto Rican interpretation right there. So Julio, People mm-hmm. who listen to Latino USA know that they also listen to In the Thick, which Futuro Media also produces.
Yeah.
You're also a vice president at Futuro, you know, co-host, I mean, the host of Latino Rebels Radio. Okay, you're Latino, yeah. You got 25 million different jobs. But specifically, you're Puerto Rican, very, very proud Boricua. So mm-hmm. how and what is your relationship to the miniseries La Brega?
I was chosen as one of the Avengers. That Alana and Marlon Bishop, who is with Futuro Studios, former senior editor for Latino USA, got a bunch of Puerto Rican storytellers, academics, journalists, artists. And I'm proud to be a Puerto Rican Avenger.
Because you're an essential part of the diaspora, but you grew up in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that. So you, the story that you tell in La Brega, it's got a great, great title. It's Basketball Warriors. It's an episode that is just so joyful. Julio, thank you so much for telling this story. But some people might be like, wait, you're going to tell a story about basketball in Puerto Rico as yeah. this is a way we can understand the complexity of Puerto Rican reality. So why this particular story, Julio?
Sports in Puerto Rico is not just sports. You know, issues of identity, issues of pride, of relationship with a country that colonized you. To me, the basketball court represented like a major like battle. I grew up in a place where Puerto Rico, you just celebrated anyone who was a Puerto Rican athlete, whether it was in baseball, in basketball, in boxing, in golf, you know, Chichi Rodriguez, come on. I mean, who doesn't love Chichi Rodriguez? So that was always part of who I was. And I remember really specific moments growing up, like in the 1976 Olympic Games, where Puerto Rico almost beat the United States. And I listened to it on a radio in Guaynabo with my abuelo and my cousin Omar. And we were rooting. There was no we didn't have it on TV. It wasn't like cable. But you were listening to this and it was like, oh my God, they're in Montreal, Canada. Right? That's so foreign, but I was like so into it. So then when my folks split and I moved to the Bronx, I still actively sought anyone who was Puerto Rican in the sports world, whether it was like in the Bronx with like Ed Figueroa, who was a pitcher, whether it was like Wilfredo Benitez, all these fighters. I rooted for every Puerto Rican athlete. So for me to come back in 79 and see this team of mostly New Yorkers who had changed the game, who were, you know, everyone knows it's like the diaspora island relationship. A New Yorker, you know, in Puerto Rico is seen as a pejorative in a lot of ways. But they literally transformed the sport and transformed the culture in Puerto Rico and the identity. So here was an example of these New Yorker, mostly Afro-Latino New Yorkers coming back to the island and putting on Puerto Rico on a path to glory. So to me, it was another example of like, you know what? We can kind of get all united here. This whole diaspora island tension, if we all got together, look at all these great things that we can do. And I think that, to me, was sort of the foundation for how it elevated through the 90s and into 2004, where I was like, Maria, I still root against the Americans in basketball.
What about you, Alana? For you, was the whole story of sports something that helped explain the Puerto Rican reality? Or were you more like, wow, I really am not into sports, but wow, what a great way to tell the story of the relationship between the United States and Puerto Rico?
You know, the sports conversation comes up so frequently around status. Even people who really want Puerto Rico to be a state will stop themselves and say, oh, but you know, then we won't have our own team, or then we won't have our own contestant in the Miss Universe pageant. And there's something about that sense of pride of being represented internationally that really matters to people. And so my approach to the story was actually from that lens, from the reporting I've done, hearing people say that, hearing people in my family say that over and over again, and feeling like, You know, this is a good example of an individual bodega, but also a collective bodega. Every episode in the series operates at two levels. So you have the individual bodega with like Flor Melendez, who's the coach for the team, the players, you know, they've got to go out on the court. They've got to figure out a way to win. And then you have this next level, this bodega colectiva, where everybody is coming together as a country, essentially, and representing themselves and feeling like that struggle is playing out on the court.
Okay, so Julio, I have a picture here.
Oh, okay.
A lot of people in Puerto Rico, I think it's in San Juan or outside of San Juan?
Yeah, in Guaynabo.
In Guaynabo. And you're in the middle, of course, and everybody's all around you. It just looks like the funnest time. at this point, it's 1980. Were you, what does, when you look at this picture and everybody's so nice and toasty, Caribbean brown, sunshiny, just sweaty also, and everybody's smiling. Got some cool fashion going on there too in 1980.
Tube socks.
What does this represent for you, like this kind of memory of Puerto Rico?
Well, that's a picture of all my cousins at the time, all the Varela cousins, and we still have a couple more that joined us later. But it's this moment of, maybe it's me romanticizing, and maybe like doing this part of La Brega, it's this moment of how do we celebrate joy, and what do we remember of things that make you who you are. That picture of all my cousins smiling, and we're all like in the summer, and it's the height of the Puerto Rican national Puerto Rican basketball and the professional league, and we'd go to games. We were all happy. We had the shirts, you know, the Pan American 1979 shirts. I had a basketball jersey. We would play for hours. My experience as a Puerto Rican has always revolved around that joy. And there's so many examples of sport being so central to that joy, Maria. I mean, when I talk about it in the piece, I mean, I watched that game in 2004 by myself in Massachusetts. I was still trying to connect with my cousins. Those people in that photo, we found a way to connect after the game, after like just how gorgeous and joyous it was. And that's what I don't know, that picture just reminds me of like love and the possibilities.
And warmth. So, Alana, we've talked about the fact that Puerto Rico competes under its own flag at sports competitions. Before doing this story with Julio, had you thought a lot about, you know, sports and teams? Were you also rooting for the Puerto Rican teams when you were growing up?
You know, I hadn't really thought about it except for Mónica Puig's gold medal win.
And for those of us who don't know, Mónica Puig won what when?
That was 2016, the first time that any Puerto Rican had won an Olympic medal. So huge. And she was playing tennis.
I was in Puerto Rico with my family watching it, my son Miguel, and we watched the final in a hotel lobby with like 100 Puerto Ricans. And here's my son Miguel. It was the first time he experienced like, whoa, papi, now I get why you root for Puerto Rican athletes and teams.
Because it was just like an all-out crazy party celebration.
Yeah. So I think like what Alana's saying, and this notion of what, that was a special moment just as much as it was a special moment when the baseball team in the World Baseball Classic almost beat the Americans the year before. It gives you like hope.
You know, we have so many different Puerto Rican flags. The blue has particular meanings. Now there's the black and white one, which is of mourning, but also of resistance. And then there's the gold one, right? Like the gold one because we won and because she was representing Puerto Rico. But I wanted to also, just hearing Julio talk, it reminds me of something that there's this poet, Raquel Salas Rivera, who said, I think it was in a video I saw maybe a year ago, he said that nobody ever gave us a manual for being Puerto Rican, right? And I think the comparison was like, you don't get a manual for being queer, for how to make a family, for how two women can start a family together. And it's the same thing with like being part of the diaspora and being part of the island community. Like nobody ever gave us this manual for how we can sort of like make one thing out of that. And I think that's so beautiful. And I think about it a lot, and what we've done with La Brega is that, yeah, you know, we're experimenting. Sometimes when it comes to unity, we do it poorly. Sometimes we do it really well. But as long as we keep trying and we don't give up on that, I think really beautiful things can come out of it.
So, Alana, you know, a lot of the episodes of La Brega are going to be on Latino USA, and we'll be hearing from you in this space. And, you know, you haven't had an opportunity to kind of focus on Puerto Rico in this way, like concerted as a journalist. And I'm just wondering, what has it meant for you to kind of dig deep into the Puerto Rican dynamic and reality for you as a journalist?
Yeah, I mean, the actual production of this series has been, you know, 8 months in the pandemic. It's been a challenge. But I've really have appreciated how faithful we've been to this concept that we can make an anthology of our own voices and our own stories. And the most remarkable thing has been the reaction that we've gotten. I mean, so many people have reached out personally on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, all over the place. And someone tweeted that you can smell the Puerto Rico on this series. Like, it feels authentic to people. And I love that. I love that sense that people feel, like, can literally smell this place off the work that we've done. Even people from the diaspora who really haven't known a lot about their history, people from the island who haven't known a lot about their history, really connecting with these stories that we're telling, whether it's something as recent as the 2004 Olympics or 1952. There are so many different ways to be Puerto Rican. And I think that when you come from the diaspora, there's several layers of imposter syndrome, right? Like, who are we to tell the story? But actually, when you look at the history of the island, you know, we are here in New York for a reason, right? We are in Chicago, we are in Boston for a reason. But I know that for everyone involved, you know, doing these stories in Spanish and in English was sort of a test of, like, can we really unite ourselves and, like, the two parts of our souls and our brains in order to pull this off? And I think it's been a beautiful experiment. That the messages I've gotten from people in the diaspora who say, gosh, like, I wrenched myself. I purposely did not consider myself Puerto Rican because of all the stereotypes. And listening to your series makes me feel really light and beautiful and full. And I love that. I love that something that we did hit someone so hard in a good way.
Well, I want to say thank you to both you and Julio for this beautiful work on La Brega. That's Alana Casanova Burgess and Julio Ricardo Varela. Alana is the host of the new series, La Brega. This episode was produced by Marlon Bishop, Ezequiel Rodriguez Andino, and Mark Pagan. It was edited by Luis Treyes. Fact-checking for this episode by Gabriel Aviles Aponte. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Andrea López Cruzado, Marta Martínez, Julieta Martinelli, Ginny Montalvo, Alejandra Salazar, Reinaldo Leaños Jr., and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw, with help from Elisheba Itub and Gabriela Baez. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our interns are Samantha Friedman and Carly Rubin. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, find us on social media. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. And the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
My boss doesn't. Hey, boss. I'm good.
From PRX.